Sounds now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beatty, and welcome, to a long-awaited Politics and Beyond episode. And I would argue that we're still the best political podcast in the country, amongst many now, actually.
Indeed. I mean, it's a growing space as we are moving towards elections. You know, politics is heating up, although it's not the only thing happening in Zimbabwe, but it certainly is an important thing happening. And, you know, it's always great to get lots of different commentary from lots of different people, analysis, just thoughts and opinions. And that's what we're here to do. We haven't been here for a while. As you can hear, we also don't have Upenyu with us today. Obviously dealing with so many technical difficulties of being in three different continents, but we will strive to continue to give our listeners what it is they want. Today, what's the date today? I don't even know. The 12th of March.
Yeah, it's, for me, it's the 13th, on Tuesday, the 13th of March. So I guess you're still in Monday.
Yeah, and I think in about 15 minutes, it will be the 13th in Zimbabwe. So, so many things going on. But today we're going to be discussing the past, the present, and the future. So we're going to look at our former president, now Mr.
They've revoked the comrades.
Now,
Mr. Goblin.
We're going to look at the current president, Edi Mnangagwa, and a potential future president.
I thought you were going to fall into the trap.
And a potential future president in Nelson Chamisa. So we're just going to be discussing issues around these three, what we think, about them, what could possibly happen in the coming months. A lot of it speculation, bit of it analysis on some of the things that they've done. The future is speculative, and the analysis will be on what they've done and what they are currently doing. So straight into it, NPF, National Political Front? National Patriotic Front is the G40 party, which has Ambrose Mtiniri as its leader.
As his leader, and so between him and Jeras,
and Jeras is the second member. But pictures surfaced with Mtiniri meeting with Mr. Mugabe, and they.
Misty.
You know what's funny actually is I saw the ZBC News tonight, the report, something about Mugabe saying he wanted his money, his pension in cash or something, and so Ruben was interviewing one of the people, was Caesar Rai, and Caesar was saying, the old man is clearly living in I don't know what world he's living in, because he clearly doesn't seem to understand that, you know, there's a cash crisis and people are sleeping in queues, and here he is wanting to, you know, demand his cash. But and Ruben called him, I'm told, or compared him to Marie Antoinette, and and the whole time I was just thinking, wow, Ruben, like, you know,
you
like,
too, like, Ruben is gone.
Of all people, like, I can understand Ramwe, they say, but Ruben, wow.
Hey, Ruben, I'm going to retirement.
But yeah, so NPF.
But on that story, yeah, go ahead.
No, carry on.
On that cash story, we'll get to the new president, the current president later, but that was cheap politicking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was shocked that they brought me my salary in cash, And I gave them my bank details and told them to go and deposit it immediately. And I'm like, but you were vice president for how long? Are you saying that they didn't have your bank details already on file?
Okay, we'll get to that one. We'll get to that one. But so NPF, so Mugabe is in South Africa. I think he's still there meeting with members of NPF, I suppose, or G40. I don't know what they're trying to do. Well, obviously they're forming a party, but whether they why they think they can win is beyond me. You know, their key members aren't even in the country and they're scared to come back. And their key members being, you know, Professor Jonathan Moyo, Xavier Kasukwere, and Muzukuru Joao. Obviously.
But the Xavier there, or Xavier Renda?
Well, I saw a picture with Xavier, one at the airport and another one that's where he was, I think, sitting with Jonathan and Mugabe. I'm not sure.
Recent photo? I thought that was an old photo. Where Mugabe is standing up.
I think so, yeah.
I thought that was an old photo, to be fair.
It honestly could be an old photo. I'm not sure.
Because Xavier was still looking, you know, fat. We've clearly seen that he's been taking care of him. He's been taking care of himself and has hit the gym hard. And I don't want this one is stressed.
Wow. Anyway, yeah. So we're not sure what's happening on that front. You know, the members aren't even clearly out. There was a list that came out and Chipanga's name was on it. Then he came out and denied it. And he said,
He went to ZBC and got
He did. He went to ZBC.
He drove there.
And he said, I'm not a part of this. I still support ZANPF. I'm part of this new dispensation. Ndoti Miangu. I'm going to vote for ED. ED has my vote. Man like Chipanga came out. Obviously, he saw his name was on that list and he thought about Kupegedz Kwa Juzi. And in this summer.
He's in the barracks. which is not very funny. I shouldn't be laughing.
It's really not. But could you please extra
judicial, judicial extrajudicial abuse and torture of politicians by the army.
But obviously, these guys are trying to, you know, throw spanner in the works on the ZANPF side, and you know, I saw what's his name, Baba Jukwa.
Edmund
posted something on his Facebook and he said he said why is it that all the people who leave ZANU-PF want to compete against it if they knew that ZANU-PF wins by rigging and was so efficient at rigging, then why would they take the chance? Obviously, then clearly, well, he was making the point that, well, it must mean then that ZANU is either it's not good at rigging or it wasn't rigging. Obviously that's not true because we know rigging isn't just about stuffing ballots. There's many ways to go about it. I just thought that was an interesting point that he raised there. And it is interesting to see, you know, a few months before election, how these guys are going to mobilize. Do they even have them? Well, obviously they have the money. Actually, let me not go there. But you know, how are they going to go about it? I don't know what your thoughts are.
That's a good question. I think a lot of these guys overestimate their own reach. Because if you've been campaigning with ZANU structures, unless you are leaving with those structures, you're going to struggle setting up your own, especially in such a short time. And also, I don't know what the goal is, because if Jonathan Moyo is involved and Mr. Mugabe is involved as well, they are political realists at the end of the day. They're not the type of people that would go into an election to lose it. So now one has to ask ourselves, what is their criteria for winning? Is it simply to frustrate the current regime? Because they obviously know that Emplos Mtini is not going to win the presidency. So what I don't understand and what I haven't really spent time thinking about is, what is their criteria for victory? Is it 5 seats? Is it a Chamisa victory? Like, what are they actually seeking to do? Because obviously it's not to win the presidency.
It's unsure. I mean, I'm unsure about it. Definitely frustrating. The current regime is one of them. They've also, definitely attacked its credibility, and I think one of the things that they will do is to definitely just try and split that vote. And deny anyone certainly deny this current administration an outright victory. I'll go out on a limb here and I say we're definitely going to a runoff. I don't think anyone's getting over 50%.
That is a massive call, eh?
The thing is, right, when I look at the way things are structured now, especially, I'm calling it today and saying, you have an up-and-coming Chamisa, who we'll speak about just now. You have, a ZANU-PF that we don't know how it's sort of structured. We aren't sure about it. But just between the two of them, it's a head-to-head. Then you have all these other fringes. And the fringes, you now have this NPF, which it has individuals who are capable of taking votes from one side. And on the other coalition side, you have Anamae Mjuru, who I'm not sure if she's joined the alliance yet or not. But because you have all these divisions and all these factions and all these people campaigning in different spaces, if we say that you have the Mnangagwa, Chamisa, Mjuru, this Mtiniri Mgabe Moyo one, and what's his BZA? Manyika and Nkosana.
I think he doesn't fit in.
Okay,
that.
He doesn't fit into the category. But between those five, right?
We'll get 99% of the votes.
You can see how even someone taking 5 or 6% can change things.
Yeah, I hadn't applied my mind to it. I can see why you would say that, particularly if you then look at 2013 results and you say Mugabe's Agavura gap in the Mashonaland provinces. Everywhere else, it was almost head to head.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Mashonaland way they would win by 21,000. Votes in a constituency. Like, those are the type of results that they used to get in Mashonaland, to the point that then they would win the provinces by over 1 million votes to 100,000 or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if ZANU can't open that similar gap in the Mashonaland provinces, then it's going to be tight.
It's going to be tight. So I honestly don't know if, we would get an outright winner in the first round. But obviously, a free and fair election. We're talking about a free and fair election here, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, we'll keep our eye on this Mugabe Mtiniri Moyo situation and see what's happening there. Oh, I don't think we spoke about his birthday and my Mugabe's.
I would like to commend the new administration on making Mugabe's birthday holiday, for the simple fact that January is long and everyone knows a holiday in February is much appreciated. like I will never be angry about that, but I don't know what happened. He had a nice small little party.
They had a party at home and he gave a few interviews, actually. Or he gave an interview, I think. He gave a speech, which was then leaked to the media. Obviously, intentionally leaked. And, all sorts of things he was complaining.
Is that the one where he was complaining about them taking his dignity and whatnot?
And his pensions, where now he wants cash. But anyway, we'll be keeping our eye on that situation, seeing what's happening. On the other, in the official ZANU-PF, The official ZANU-PF, our president, is still going around touring with his scarf.
Everywhere. Can I just have a quick rant about the scarf quickly?
Please, go on.
Look, I don't know why people online are getting so offended when you call it the ED scarf. Like, it's one of those... And this is where I just realized, Kuti, the designation idiots is good, is one I might have to pick up. Because I just had this argument with a very popular Twitter Tueleb Ali, and he was saying it's not an ED scarf. The weather in Davos was sub-zero. It's just a Zimbabwe scarf. And I'm like, okay, cool. Davos was a sub-zero. Cool. How about Botswana?
Yeah, I mean,
he's clearly intentionally wearing it as branding for himself and for the country. I don't know why people would refute that claim.
Obviously, it's been adopted by the government as part of their branding strategy. Everyone's wearing it. Maim Fumira was in Germany recently for the a tourism expo, I think, there, and she had the scarf. You know, all sorts of other government
ambassador
officials.
Katarina Leng.
Yes, she also wore it. That was a bit of a controversial one I saw online, where people were saying she was part of her endorsement of the new regime.
But did you see Bettina's explanation of it? She said, "Oh, she was wearing MDC red and the ED scarf, so she was remaining
both
neutral."
Sides. I mean, you know, I just think it is a bit of a reach. Obviously, the scarf is part of their branding, and I just think he should. I don't know what material it's made out of, but he should just get a silk scarf if he's going to be going around into the desert with one, rather than one.
Because it does look a bit silly, doesn't it?
If you're in Botswana.
So hot, you've taken off your scarf, then you're wearing a scarf. You've taken off your tie because it's so hot, but you're still wearing a scarf.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, he's still going around places. He was in DRC. He was in Botswana recently discussing the Kazungula border. He had an op-ed in the New York Times.
The New York Times. That
came out today, actually.
I've read it. It was a good move.
Yeah, basically move. He was Zimbabwe is open for business. We are on a new path. It was pretty much all the rhetoric that he's been on for the past few weeks. He had an article that came out in The Economist where that was a bad article. I don't know who prepped that one or what, but he came out and said that there was no violence in 2008. I don't have the exact quotes, but that
he said
was
Zimbabwean elections in 2008 were free and fair. If there was violence, why did no one report it to the police?
That's the quote there. That was bad. I don't know why he said that or who advised that.
Because he believes it. He believes it. So no, that's what I.
You know what? I'd honestly be shocked if they actually believed that.
So how do they sleep at night if they know?
Sleeping at night.
The converse argument is that they don't care. Right, so there's two ways to look at how they would justify.
Well,
these
right
things
now, right
heads.
Now
their
argument is bygones be bygones, ka.
But the
question
doesn't mean you should lie about things.
No, but and this is the question: is what bygones? Because if you're saying there was no violence, and this is the question that should be posed to him: is if you're saying that there was no violence, and because it was not reported. Your argument is it was not reported, so there was no violence. Then what bygones are you speaking about? You know,
and Chris, it then comes to the question: if that he believes 2008 was a free and fair election, how do we then take him seriously when he promises a free and fair election in 2018?
It's a very good question, and it's left to be seen. I hope that you know, the new chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is you know, watching all these things and paying attention to these things, and actually is, I don't know if they've done anything. I did see something about, you know, there's all sorts of changes that need to be done in terms of there being a free and fair election. We've spoken about the about ZBC. We've spoken about, you know, the opening up the media space to opposition parties. I saw that Fadzai Mahere mentioned, I think it was on Twitter or Facebook, that she'd been invited to speak on ZBC or for an interview on ZBC.
Which was later cancelled.
Was it?
Yeah, I missed
some of these things.
They later cancelled the interview request, saying that they've gotten what they needed from her from a previous interview.
That's interesting. But these, and I think I've mentioned this on the podcast actually, that I wonder if any of the political parties has A, taken this issue to court, B, taken this issue to ZEC itself, because ZEC is supposed to be the referee and they're the ones who are supposed to, you know, guarantee.
ZEC, Munzura did, and ZEC said that in as far as, and this is something that should go to court, but it hasn't gone to court this election, but it has previously gone to court. I think in 2008 and 2013, there were court cases, against ZBC. I don't know how those were found, but, Munzura from said that in terms of media freedoms, there's an argument going on right now, is that until an election date has been announced, technically they don't have to ensure that ZBC is giving equal airing to everyone, because it's not really part of the there's a funny, silly argument that they came. I'm trying to find the quote for you right now.
But that's very interesting.
So ZEC has no power
over ZBC until
there's it's campaign time, essentially.
Which is interesting, which then begs the question whether, you know, this administration is stalling. They did say that, you know, we could have an early election. We still haven't. We still don't have an indication as to when that could be. But you know, if they're going off on, well,
look, it's 13th of March for me today. The latest an election would be is in August. So an early election is May, really. Like, so I think they're going to announce an election with a month lead in time, and you're going to see a bunch of court cases. Remember how jealousy became jealousy and how he became famous in the first place?
Yeah, because he was the one who initiated
stupid court case in 2013.
Yakubata bata, I can see. But yeah, so Vamnangagwa, you know, still has a lot of questions to answer. Obviously, he's writing all these nice words in the New York Times, but it's the action on the ground that people want to see. People are tired of the rhetoric, you know, and it was nice the first couple of days, but it's even speaking about policy changes. Changing the indigenization law is the only one that I've seen that's, you know, actually
happened.
Of which I don't know if the law's actually been changed itself, but I do know that.
No, I haven't seen any gazette. I think they've said they're doing it, but I haven't seen the gazette office thing.
So this is where the issue is what are the actual tangibles? You know, we need to start moving from rhetoric to tangibles. And this is where the media needs to come in and play in and actually ask the right questions. It's not, and it's first of all, it's not just about, you know, singing the praises and state media. I sigh. I love you guys because you pay my bills. But we need to have a serious talk about, you know, about the role of the media in keeping the government in check. And then also, you know, private media itself needs to be smarter. it's nice, it's great to be, you know, critical. But even in your critique, you need to give
to people, be smart, to be
yeah, you biz. Need, you need to give people analysis. You need to give people things that they can actually comprehend and break
and
down.
We've had the same argument before. Remember when I was saying Matigari is the best investigative journalist in the country? Mm-hmm. Who unfortunately now is he's allowed as a person to choose his sides, but the handle has now been well and truly
been captured.
Well and truly captured by the ruling cabal of juntaists.
But it's interesting to see how many people have been captured. Trevor Ncube is another one who's captured.
Trevor Ncube is captured. Petina Gapa is captured.
Petina Gapa is captured.
Katarina Lenging is captured. Only Ambassador Harry has refused
to be captured.
But you know what I find quite interesting though, and this is something I'll say from a position of privilege. If it had not been for my familial ties and for how I had been raised to see Zimbabwean politics or to see ZANU-PF specifically, right, I could understand how someone with privilege would be very excited about the ED presidency, because for anyone who's grown up wealthy in Zim, he's good for business, he's good for those interests. For anyone who has made money off ZANU or has made money in the country when ZANU has been in charge and has benefited off those patronage systems, he's the safest choice because he ensures those patronage systems are still in place and that there will be money coming into the country to grow off. So I can see how a lot of my friends, a lot of people I've grown up with, and this is fully understanding my privilege and the opportunities that were afforded to me in terms of the schools I went to. And I can see and I understand why they're so excited about ED, because Malik Zarukuya, there's investment coming. Whereas on the other hand, someone who pretends to be pro-poor or you don't really know an unknown quantity, like Chamiso or BZA, or that is a lot more uncertainty and would be less popular for someone that's already living in borrowed Hillbrook right now, already has a decent amount of money under Mugabe. So imagine what he would be able to do under, you know, Mugabe, except liked by the West. You know what I mean?
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, it's an issue of interests. You know, what are people's interests? And people with means, you know, in the last 15 to 20 years have, especially in the last, let's say the last 5 years, have had to really, you know, pinch and struggle because of the way the economy was going. When things bounced back and we got the US dollar, they were in the best position. When things, you know, went down, obviously they also took a bit of a hit. But now, because they have the means, when investors come in, you know, they
can exploit that first.
Exactly. They get to pick off first because they already have, you know, the support structures, the infrastructure and all the things that go with it. So I definitely understand why a lot of, you know, people in that position, I agree with you, are, you know, favorable to this administration, because they also have the links to the people within the administration,
yeah.
Someone new coming in changes all of that, and it's, you're still in the same position. Even if those people who come in, you know, bring investors and sort of that, but you're just, this one has more certainty. On the flip side, though, you know, the masses, I can understand why the masses are into a different candidate, and why, you know, Chamisa's got popularity, because this administration, this current administration, doesn't or hasn't delivered on anything that they expect them to deliver. And as far as people are concerned, either nothing has changed or things are getting worse. So it really...
At least in Harare, I can't speak for the whole of the country, and obviously Harare is not Zimbabwe. In Harare, from the videos I've seen, from the people I've spoken to, This Nyaye, Bullet Train, all these things. Well, if we're moving on to Chamisa, if that was your segue to get onto Chamisa, if it doesn't seem as damaging for him as the onlines would make it seem.
So let me just interject here and say, first and foremost, conversations that happen online, I honestly believe are so far removed from realities on the ground. And so far that a lot of people will be shocked at election time by election results in certain places just because I think they spend too much time online, you know, discussing these things in virtual realities without
understanding. Whose independent campaign are you talking about?
No, I'm not talking about anyone's independent campaign. But I just think that people need to, you know, get offline and actually... My advice to everyone, you know, is attend a rally. It doesn't even have to be a MDC, ZANU-PF. It can be BZA. It can be, oh, Nkosana doesn't hold rallies. It can be any of the 100 and
something. I'm going to put a ban on Nkosana.
It can be any of the 100 and something political parties that we have. But attend a rally and speak to people on the ground and just engage with them and also just... You know, hear what people are saying, especially in those spaces and in those environments, and you'll definitely get a different perception of the political landscape in Zimbabwe, I think. So moving on to bullet trains.
Bullet trains, 15 bids, and Commonwealth scholarships.
First and foremost, I honestly think that, you know, the rhetoric is a bit too much. And I'll say this not as a political
rival. As objectively as you can.
As objectively as I can. And I'll say it because, you know, it certainly can work, but the realities won't be what the promises are. And you fall... It's great to dream. First and foremost, it's great to dream. I have nothing against, you know, bullet trains or even wanting them in Zimbabwe. But he said within 2 years. And this is my issue with certain timelines and things like with putting timelines on things and increasing people's expectations is people have had very high expectations or people are desperate, if I can put it that way. And it's easy to play off their expectations or to play off their, you know, off their situation. But then when it comes time to deliver, it could be very difficult to deliver. And then, you know, we fall into this situation where, you know, again, another 2.2 million job situation. And I'm not trying to say that that is how it's going to play out, but you also want to, you know, be a bit cautious in as much as you are being a dreamer. And I think there's a way to maneuver within it and say those things without going to extremes. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you completely. I think what he hasn't fully, and this is me making an excuse for him, I don't think he's fully stepped into the role of, or fully realized what it is to be the final word in the party. Looking at Chamisa and his speeches throughout, because I did a little deep dive, he's always been like that. But at the end of the day, Morgan would then come on afterwards and speak and give a moderating influence. And, you know, the crowd would have been energized by Chamisa. Morgan would say his logical things and everyone would remember Morgan's speech and just sort of let Chamisa's speech go because he's this young guy. But he hasn't realized that he's now the focal point. He's now everything. So you can't just speak to your crowd there in front of you or to your base. You need to appeal wider to your base in many ways. And I think that's his major weakness, is that he's rash, he's prone to hyperbole, and he gets carried away when he's speaking. But those are his weaknesses. And
yeah, I mean, as
I don't know, I don't think they'll be solved before the election time, to be fair.
You know, I, like I said, I I don't see anyone getting it outright in this in the first round of the elections, but I definitely think that he is the biggest contender. If we take the junta element away from the current administration, I actually think that he's perhaps the biggest and best contender. And really, they're running on a great message, a great campaign, generational renewal. Is that what it is?
Generational consensus. Yeah.
And it's a great message. Definitely, 40 years old, he's much closer to the demographic of Zimbabwe in terms of age.
And he's cheeky, and it just cracks me up. And the generational message is, it's like, we don't have a problem with Emerson. We think he's a great leader. We're just saying, go and rest.
He's got it down to a perfect, his messaging is perfect in that regard, in saying, you know what, these guys are freedom fighters. They've done well. They've brought us this far. We want to take it on. We want to take it to the next level. We want to take it forward. That's perfect messaging. I think that is where they should actually center and focus on, and leave the anointed giraffes and the 2 year bullet trains and the man coming from India to build them.
But the thing is now on the conversation online is obviously here's a funny thing. Sorry, this might be taking it a bit left field. It's Morgan would always point out what's wrong with ZANU a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. His speeches would be about what ZANU. I think Tendai Biti does the same thing. He points out what's going on in ZANU a lot.
Mm-hmm.
People then say, "Dude, we know what's wrong with ZANU. Stop mm-hmm. telling us what's wrong with ZANU. What can you offer us?"
Mm-hmm.
Right? Chamisa very rarely says this. He speaks more about what he wants to do than about what ZANU is doing wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People say, "No, you can't do that. That's unrealistic." Right? People say, "Oh, what's your ideology? What are you running on?" Then he says, "Oh, generational consensus, generational change. So I should only vote for you because you're young. That's not an ideology." Whereas, I don't know. I think...
No, but you see, this the thing is, right, is you'll find critics everywhere. And again, people online, you know, they go off. It's I've really been trying not to have conversations with people on Twitter about Zimbabwean politics.
I saw you went from following 1,000 people to following 400. Dropping rapidly.
I sort of had to move away from a lot of the noise. But those arguments to me are they don't hold water. I can understand when people are saying, well, you know, that some of the things you say are a bit extreme. But where I think he has a great message is in terms of the generational consensus. And in terms of, you know, moving forward and where the country should go, I just don't think he should be, you know, so much so many hyperboles. I think there's room to actually say things about generational consensus and about dreaming about the future, dreaming about the future within a scope that everyone can get on board with.
Do you know who massively changed? Who showed him how it should be done? Fadzi, I don't know if she wants to be called Mrs. or Miss or Fadzai or Advocate Mayere.
Cheeky.
She changed. Huh?
I said that was cheeky.
She changed that message. She's the one that came out and said, "Well, I don't know what's wrong with dreaming. So if you guys have any dreams, please just use the hashtag #MyZimbabweanDream and tell us what you're dreaming." So she's now online. She's been posting up "My Dream for Zimbabwe" the hashtag, and has used that based off the whole bullet train momentum and story. Boom. So she's masterfully turned it into a campaign tool for herself.
Boom. It's perfect. I think it's, you know, it's great. And these are some of the things that should be happening. I think you can definitely, well, there's so many things that they could be doing with that. But yeah, for me, Chamisa, scale it back a bit, you know, speak to issues within reason, but definitely keep pushing that angle, because he definitely has that angle, on lock. I know, you know, ZANU-PF had a youth meeting recently, and the message that came up was that was, social media and I'm or something to that effect, which is, you know, clearly that side is out of depth. What they do have is the incumbency, and if they can make things turn around within the next few months, you know, which,
do you think that's why they are delaying announcing an election date?
I have no idea. It could possibly be, it could be a lot of things. You know, ED's been going around the around SADC and the world, you know, trying to push his message, obviously trying to get people, you know, to come to his side, so that whatever happens afterwards, they will say, well, you know, Tom Ziva, and we can support him and all sorts of things.
Yeah, but I'm afraid if your prediction is correct of a runoff election, I think that's when, because even 2008, like, we say 2008 was a violent election, but the real violence started before the runoff. It wasn't when ZANU realized they hadn't won the majority, that's when things got ugly.
Yeah, but then happens is you then, in the runoff this time round, is where people will then, where coalitions will form.
Yeah, yeah, and of course.
And you'll just have to.
You'll see my Mjuru go back to ZANU.
Go back to ZANU, exactly. You know, you will literally have to form a coalition with some of the other parties who get, you know, a smaller percentage of the vote, and see what happens there. So yeah, it definitely will be interesting. But you know, anyway. Chamisa's got the platform. You know, so many young people out there.
We haven't spoken about Mike Kupia is still in Matabelele and Wachibukura as well.
Yeah, there is that issue of, you know, that's what I wanted to mention actually when I was talking about this whole runoff situation, is that the MDC alliance itself is still not strong, or as strong as it could and should be. So obviously Mike Kupia is not going to disrupt anything right now, because it's that train has already, you know, it's already set off. Chamisa is the candidate. He's going around, he's doing the rallies, he's meeting the people. Last I heard anything from her was, actually, there we have it, the violence. That's one of the things that the MDC is going to have to put in check and find a way to do so very systematically, yeah, but also definitively. Is, you know, it can, depending on how long this Mike Kupia situation goes on, you could keep having this issue of violence reoccurring.
I'm almost certain that by the end of next week, Mike Kupia will no longer be a member of the MDC.
Oh yeah, quite possibly.
I think. And
was anything done about that actually?
About the violence?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an inquiry going on that's meant to report to the next national NEC. So that's why I was saying by the end of the week, because the next NEC is next week or whatever.
Okay.
So that's when the violence report comes in, and that's when, if you remember, one of the resolutions for the last one was to suspend Obed Kutu and to compel Mike Kupia to meet the national leaders to plot a way forward. So she has refused to meet the national leaders. Obed Kutu has also refused to be suspended and has continued doing his thing on Twitter. He's a Twitter. And obviously, we assume that the violence report will be going in. Expect punishment for people you've probably never heard of, people that were there, of course. But if anyone thinks that if you believe that there was someone who was sponsoring it, I doubt very likely that the person will get would have anything done against them. But the perpetrators are likely to be expelled from the party.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It happens everywhere. You go after the perps, and everyone else at the top obviously will get away with it, because this isn't a situation where someone is going to come out and snitch. And even if they do, though, who's honestly going to listen to them? But yeah, that's something that the MDC needs to deal with. They do need to deal with their internal squabbles. They need to, you know, solidify the alliance. I think everyone is waiting for an election date before candidate names are put forward or announced officially.
Yeah.
But I think
exactly.
But I think that's something that they do need to sort out, or should be sorting out now.
No, they have started sorting it out in as far as the MDC alliance is going. There was a call for CVs, for candidates to hand in their CVs. The interesting thing is, if you want to be an MP, you hand in your CV. The fee for application is $50 for an MP. Sorry, is $50 for a counselor. It's $100 for an MP, and you have to have in your CV, and you have to have a minimum of, I think, like A level, a minimum for counselor of A level, and a diploma for an MP. That's the list I saw. This is just going off a group, so I don't know how far true, if it's official communication. So don't, if it's wrong, then it's just what I saw. And then this is where it gets interesting. If you want to run as a member of parliament, it's $150, right, in any constituency. If there's an incumbent member of MDC already in that constituency, it's $1,000.
To what? To run?
To hand in your CV papers.
To challenge them?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. So what happens to all the other rules? I mean, didn't they have rules like, you know, if you want to be an MP, you sort of had to be in the party for 5 years or 3 years or something like that? Like, how are they going to circumvent some of those rules?
Those rules are
suspended?
I think that's why they ask for CVs, to see whether you qualify under those rules. But then also remember, the easiest way to circumvent those rules is to make you an alliance candidate and not necessarily an MPC candidate.
That's what I was wondering. Okay.
So Job Scala, for example, would be an alliance candidate, not necessarily an MDC.
Okay.
But what they need to do is, if one of these young boys, ana Mlambo, ana Ustalos, ana Mango, ana some of these Zinasu comrades, if these Zinasu comrades aren't given or aren't part of the MP candidates list, then are they really for generational renewal?
Well, the thing is, right, that's a good question. Is what actually does generational renewal mean? And what sort of candidates, this is a discussion that needs to happen, is what sort of candidates do we want to see in parliament? It's all fair and fine to say, you know, a young leader at president, or, you know, or whoever at president, but what sort of candidates are we putting into the House of Assembly? And we've all seen some of the conversations and some of the things that have happened in the House of Assembly. You know, over the years, there's some people who go in there and have never spoken a word, you know, and so many other things. And it's important to have competent individuals in parliament.
Imagine those UZ guys. You've seen the video, yeah?
I have,
I'm sure most.
Yeah.
Postalos or Mlambo. Revolutionary salutations to you, mate.
No, so, it would be interesting. to see, you know, what sort of lists come out, both in the Alliance and in ZANU-PF, independent candidates and, you know, the fringe. But with specifically MDC Alliance and ZANU-PF, because ZANU-PF, again, it's an issue of, you know, if MDC runs on this generational renewal and they have so many young people, people who can just relate to constituents, this is where it's going to be key.
That's my, if MDC is going to make one mistake, it's fielding the same candidates that they've had before in a majority of these places.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, for example, if Jameson Timba runs again in Mount Pleasant, or Marida, not Marida, what's his name? Eric Knight runs in Barrie, they will lose.
I think anyone who's lost an election or lost in 2013 should just call it quits. They should just
ZANU will always have more money than MDC. But what happened the first time when MDC won seats is that they were young, they had energy. I only know TB, but TB, when he first became an MP, was 31, right? So he beat a ZANU-PF incumbent because they had the energy to go around the constituency and to actually work, as opposed to relying on purely big. So the only way MDC will, in my opinion, win significant inroads in parliamentary seats is beating them by energy, asymmetric warfare. You can't beat them by big. You can't have more cars. You can't have more posters. You can't have more T-shirts. But you can be on the ground for longer, for harder, and personally.
Let's see how it goes, man. I think that we can wrap up on that. It can bring us to the end. Thank you all for listening. Please share your thoughts on all these things we've been discussing. Hit us up on Twitter. Let me not promise to say things. I won't engage in discussions that bring in the likes of Ali and.
And did you see me and Ali go? It was Ali with the scarf, and then Matigari has blocked me.
Ali blocked me, so. Or I blocked Ali, and then Ali blocked me back. So I don't follow those conversations. But no. But
Ali Amun Wakoka, you know, he's now quite ED.
Yeah, but.
Anyway, quick message from our sponsors.
A quick message. I wanted to shout out Zororo, was Makamba Point of View. Please check it out. Point of Views. Good content.
It's on his Facebook. Zororo Makamba, the Facebook page. That's where he usually posts.
It's
good digestible content. It's really good. And production values are out of this world.
Yeah, it's 5 minute clips, five to eight minute clips. Really short. And it's just going through things that are happening, you know, within the political landscape in Zimbabwe, and also the region. Last week they spoke about land reform in South Africa, which was really good. He spoke about it. So do check that out. Very good content.
Yeah. And I have one. Pambeni Projects, if you guys haven't heard of it. It's a new online service for entrepreneurs and business owners to list their projects and attract investments and partnerships from the global community. Basically, you sign up at pambeni.org and they will find you investors and partnerships for your projects. So if you're young and you have an idea and you're struggling as to where you're going to find money and you're actually organized and serious, definitely go and check them out. That's pambeni.org, pambeni.org, and yeah, you might actually find an opportunity that might change your life for you.
Right. And
I wasn't paid for that. Next time I want my money.
And that's it from us. Check us out on Facebook, Politics and Beyond. Hit us up on Twitter at Poly and Beyond ZW. Is that what it is? I think so. Should be what it is.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening. Cheers.
Cheers. And now.
Capital 263.